serves on our board and is a valuable asset to us. Please welcome Judge Rourke.
Ladies, good afternoon. That's okay. I don't have a PowerPoint, so I can walk around. Everybody's in the front when it comes to that. I am Les Rorick, and I am a native speaker of Spanish. Not. Now, here's the deal, ladies. I'm here not to teach you Spanish. Well, I have a few things to pass along, perhaps, because as anybody who has studied a language will know, a language is not learnable in an hour. I decided that a long time ago. There just isn't any way to learn a language in an hour. So I guess if we went to beginning Spanish and intermediate Spanish and final Spanish, I suppose in 3 hours we ought to be totally fluent. Once again, not. I've got a prosecutor in my court who saw that advertisement on television for Rosetta Stone. He is absolutely morally certain that in a matter of, I don't know, maybe 22 minutes, from totally unable to utter the first word of Spanish to being absolutely fluent. Will not happen, but I still spent $500 because I couldn't get him off my back any other way. Now, look, I do have a considerable background in Spanish, although I am not a native speaker. And I've done it the hard way and the easy way. I've done it in school. I've done it the hard knocks way. And what I decided to do when I had the opportunity to teach intermediate Spanish was I decided to pass along to you, if not particular words or phrases that you won't remember till you get to the hospitality room tonight, but rather a methodology, a way, and a source of learning the things that you might want to learn. Now, I don't know where you all are from. I'm from Pasadena, Texas. And I will tell you that there are days when I speak more Spanish than I do English. That's just the way my world is. I find that it's difficult sometimes to get anybody in my office to speak Spanish. Even the speakers are Spanish. They don't want to go to no courtroom, you know. Say, I need one of you ladies in the courtroom. It's break time for everybody. Now, so I came to this job in 2002, having banged around practicing law for 25 years before then, and having done a lot of municipal work, and having represented as a private practitioner any number of Spanish-speaking clients. And the first thing I did was I realized that I had missed the opportunity to grandfather in my bilinguals as interpreters, and we were in a bad place in terms of having certified interpreters, and I was going to have to spend a lot of money to do something that could have been done for free earlier, but that horse was out of the barn, corral, gate, wherever the horse got to. So I gathered all my bilingual clerks around the table, and I said, okay, ladies, let's chat. And I said, how, for example, do you accuse somebody of speeding? Dead silence. I mean, dead silence. You could hear a pin drop. Finally, the consensus was, oh, we just asked Teresa. She was born in Mexico. Oh, okay, good idea. So I guess I should drag Teresa around with a rope all day long to do that. Well, what the truth was, they really did have some notion of how to do it, but they had a general reluctance to do it improperly, incorrectly, or in a way that might cause them some measure of embarrassment. And I don't blame them. We all feel that way, don't we? But here's the thing. I guess I was in a little different position because nobody expected anything of me. I could pretty much say anything I wanted. They say, oh, don't worry about him. He doesn't know what he's doing. But the clerks were not just about being embarrassed. They were also about due process. They were also about not denying a defendant an opportunity to have a fair say or a fair hearing for fear of and for reason that they had imperfectly, improperly, incorrectly, or just wrongly translated or understood a particular phrase. And I respect that. I really do. Now, So the task at hand then, from my standpoint, was, well, what do I do, having confessed already that I wasn't a native speaker, to get everybody on the same page, up to speed, at least start a conversation amongst the clerks about what it is that we ought to say in court and how it is that we ought to say it. You know, some slang works, some slang doesn't work, and I'll give you an example of that in short order. Now, I leave my office. I stop by my old law office to visit with my partner, who I divorced after 17 years to take this new high-paying job. And he says, hey, let's go on in here. I got this guy here who had a relative in a bus wreck in South Texas, and he wants me to, you know, sue these folks, but I don't know a word he's saying. So I gathered that this guy had some relatives who were injured in a bus accident leaving Monterey and coming to Houston. The bus flipped over. The driver, as they always like to say in the newspaper, se dio a la fuga. And what happened? This guy was gravely injured. They wanted to sue somebody. So I said, I wonder how I'm going to go about figuring out how to help this guy and help my former partner who was doubly disabled in this regard. So I did what most everybody does all the time anymore. I just started typing stuff on my Internet Explorer. And I popped up a website that you that's noticed in your paper from the University of Texas at San Antonio that is called Mexican Newspapers Online. Shazam! It is basically an index to all of the major newspapers in Mexico that you can just click on. Some are register sites, a couple are pay sites. You have to kind of pick and choose. And you can go see what's going on in Mexico if you have some measure of understanding of the language. You can have just a really good time. In fact, I've even Xeroxed the web page, or printed the web page for you in the paper. Now, so I went down and I clicked on a Monterey paper, and what do you know? There was an article about the bus wreck. It said who the owner of the bus company was, yada, yada, yada. I translated the article, gave it to my former partner, wished him well, and left. So, this was my introduction. What did I think? Well, I said, you know, the one thing that I really like and know about newspapers is, number one, they are written at a level of common understanding for everybody, you know. High school dropout, PhD, most everybody can understand most of the words that are in a newspaper. And number two, they are written in such a way as to neither offend somebody or to get so far off the beaten path that somebody will say, whoa, that is really bad, you know, conduct or bad language. This was the kind of thing that I was looking for, because I was trying to figure out, if I'm talking to, and of course if you're conducting business in Spanish in your court, you're conducting it largely with native speakers. So I was trying to figure out how I could best communicate with native speakers in a way that was familiar to them. My notion was, if I read it in the newspaper, it was probably going to be understood in my courtroom. Makes perfect sense. Now, it may not be totally technically correct in terms of the way you would translate a particular charge, although it's pretty close for the most part, having compared it to a lot of other things. But ultimately, what do we do when we've got a case in court? Do we go through the whole statute and explain the nuances of a speeding violation to an English speaker? No. You're accused of speeding, dude. How do you plead? Is that pretty much what it comes out like? So why would not a you're accused of speeding, dude, equivalent in Spanish be equally functional in a courtroom or at the front window or wherever it is that you folks as clerks might work? Seemed to me that it made perfect sense to do that. So I started spending a few minutes in the morning, and I started off with the Monterey paper, and then it became a register site, so I moved over to the Diario de Chihuahua, which I'm reading now because it's got all the gang violence in it, so it's really got the cool stuff as well as the traffic stuff in it. And I started noting that certain phrases and terms repeated over and over and over and over again. Well, I'm not real smart, but I got it figured out that if I read the same thing 5 days in a row, it's probably pretty common parlance. So I said, okay, now I'm going to start. And I started what you have in front of you that I call my lexicon of Spanish terms. And I started with one entry. Here it is, first entry. And 7 years later, I'm at whatever it is, 45 pages, 9-point type, and 60 pages in 12-point type. And it continues to grow. I've made any number of entries in it since I sent it to the Education Center for inclusion in your papers. It is, I suggest to you, therefore, a work in process. It's not complete. It may not even be perfect. But it's the best I could do, you know, with a little bit at a time, a little bit here, a little bit there. And I've had the good fortune of having, I've hired two native speakers as clerks in my department. One lady who works for me, who helped me work through the editing process of the paper, is from Lima, Peru, where she was a practicing lawyer for 10 years before she came here with her husband. And I glommed onto her when she was in paralegal school. And I've kept her as a clerk, and she's worked her way through the ranks, and she's studying for her Level 3 certification now. And it has been a real treat for me to work with somebody like that. I have another lady I hired who worked for years in the embassy in Mexico City. And she doesn't have legal training, but she's got a more formal, stilted vocabulary kind of training. And I bounce my ideas off of these ladies. And I listen to what they have to say. I figure, who am I to correct them? They've only grown up with the language. But not only that, they've used it in the same profession that I'm presently in. And what I've learned is that a lot of things don't translate. Anybody who deals in foreign languages knows you just can't translate some stuff. You transliterate things. You move the idea from one medium or one language to another language. But this notion that you can simply go to these word use things that translate every word, and you look at the end of the day and say, oh my God, what is that? That doesn't work. And so you work with concepts, you work with ideas, you work with methodology, you work with the way that people say things. In principally my Spanish speakers are from Mexico. I get a few from El Salvador, a few from Guatemala, but mostly Mexican, mostly Norteño. So, you know, you can kind of focus on the vocabulary in that area and come up with something that works. Now, not everything works in the same way across the boards. And I'll give you an example. I already cautioned you, and I cautioned myself time after time about getting too slangy. You know, in English, if you grew up with English, you have a sense of slang. You know, you feel it, don't you? You know what it means. In fact, we're so slangy in our vocabulary and in our speech that we don't really listen to each other, do we? Hey, dude, what's going on? Not bad, man. You know, I ain't heard a thing the guy said, but I know what he said. You know what I'm saying? Well, I mean, sometimes when I'm in the Valero in the morning getting my coffee and I get the, you know, the roofing crew in there and they're doing that kind of thing, I said, well, yeah, I don't understand because they're doing the, hey, dude, what's shaking kind of thing, and, you know, that's not where I am because I don't want to be there, frankly. Because when I get there, then I might say something I regret when I'm where I need to be. So, let me give you an example. And I don't mean to be crude, but this really happened. I have a bad problem with guys coming into the courtroom with the baseball cap on. Right? So it seems a simple thing to say, take off your hat. So, how do you say that? Volunteers. Nobody. Ma'am?
In Spanish?
In Spanish.
Okay.
Yeah, precisamente. Quítese la cachucha. Okay, so my secretary, whose parents were native speakers and, you know, who speaks Spanish fluently, said, oh, Judge, quítese la cachucha. That's what my daddy said all the time. So I went to the lady from Peru. I said, Delia, I'm trying to be sure I get this right, and I need to tell the gentlemen who come in the courtroom to take off their hats. Now, Maria says the best thing for me to say is, quítese la cachucha. Delia's face turned the color of this tablecloth. Now, I wasn't real sure what I'd said, but I knew I shouldn't have said it. Now, I'll let you suppose and surmise what a cachucha is in Peru, but it ain't a baseball cap, even though it is in Mexico, in Puerto Rico, and many other places. Lesson is that before you really try to jump out and try something really strange sometimes, you may want to bounce it off somebody and see if there's another possibility. I ended up abandoning cachucha for gorra, okay? That didn't offend anybody that I could tell. But the point is that no matter how much you think you know, no matter how much my secretary Maria knew, and Maria said, Delia, my daddy said that all the time, and Delia, she couldn't even talk. She So I just knew that if I had one Peruvian in the courtroom, I was going to be before the Commission on Judicial Conduct when I said that, so I don't say that. And in like manner, there are things that all of us are tempted to say that we ought not say. So what I've done is I have developed over the course of time a very stilted, very formal vocabulary for use in a courtroom, not in a restaurant necessarily, but in a courtroom, that in my experience doesn't seem to offend anybody and doesn't seem to be improperly communicated so that people don't understand what I'm talking about. It works for me. It may work for you. I've put it all in this lexicon to the extent I can. It's not a memory. Ma'am? Well, you may not. Works for you. I'm not trying to change your ways. I'm simply telling you that you may be more comfortable using Tex-Mex than I am using Tex-Mex. Remember, this is intermediate Spanish we're talking about here. This is not a course for people who are totally, completely, fluently bilingual, although they're welcome. I've done this class around the state. I've had people who can't say the first buenos dias to people who are all but native speakers, and everybody in between. So I'm not trying to change your ways. If you're well understood and you're not offending anybody, go for it. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to establish a way, a methodology, and a basic vocabulary that I think will not be offensive and will communicate effectively what it is that you want people to know. Now, again, I can only tell by experience whether this works or not. I know the things I've put in that lexicon are things that I have read either in newspapers, or if you don't know this, by the way, and I've got a couple pages from DF in there, you can access the Reglamento de Tránsito de any number of states or cities in Mexico. You want to know what the traffic offenses are in Mexico City? Click on that website that I've given you, and you'll be able to see precisely how it is that they express most of the things that they fine people for. There it is, and take a look at it. It's not terribly different from the newspaper version, by the way. But just as I would not open up my transportation code and read the elements of a stop sign violation to somebody, neither would I necessarily buy into all of the technical jargon included in a transportation code from Mexico City, for example, because it would be equally stilted whether in English or Spanish. Now, one more admonition that I will give you, and then we will talk about some particular things that I'm particularly fond of finding out how other people say things. It's a learning experience for me as well. Not all of the procedures that we have in Texas are necessarily available to an accused person in Mexico, for example. So here I am conducting a jury trial to a native speaker of Spanish, on a stop sign violation, for example. Now, it didn't dawn on me. I didn't know for a long time that they didn't have jury trials where he came from. Not for nothing. Okay? So when I say to the guy in court, you know, prefiere juicio con juicio con jurado, well, I may as well say, you know, try to describe a zebra to a blind man. What is it that somebody says to me? Que es un jurado. And then now I'm stuck. Now I got to explain. I got six dudes sit over in the box over there and listen to your case, okay? You happy with that? Well, it came as a shock to me as I was reading the newspapers to find out that it wasn't until the judicial reform of just a couple years ago now that they even had juicios orales in Mexico. I mean, everything else was worked out in sort of this collaborative, mediated, go work out your differences. Things were submitted in writing to judges, and there was procedures that we're not used to, like something they called carear, face-to-face, between the victim and the accused while they shook fingers at each other and tried to work out their differences. It is only in the last couple years that we're even in the oral trial stage. And boy, they're having fun. The Mexican lawyers are having a great time now because everybody's you know, engaged. I mean, they got all this body of procedure that they've watched, you know, on TV shows and stuff. It's really come to fruition in the Mexican judicial system now. But these are still three-judge panels, okay? We don't put a jury in the box. Does everybody read some Spanish? Okay, well, I'm going to hand this out to you. I just printed this. It just seems like a few weeks ago. I can't read the date because it's a bad copy. There we go, sometime in March because my bifocals have failed me. But it has to do with, hope I got one more for you. What? Juicio oral. Which one were they talking about? Which one? The first one. Right? I got another one, ma'am. We're talking March of 2009. We're going to have the first oral trial here, March 2009. Well, okay. How easy, even knowing that you have the ability to have an oral trial, how easy is it to get one? I bracketed the third paragraph down there. Somebody translated quickly for me. As might be remembered, in order that a case should arrive at or have an oral trial, it's necessary what? That the preliminary procedures and steps have not resulted in some way of resolving the conflict, whether it be by acuerdo reparatorio, this is that work it out with me deal, suspensión de proceso, or proceso abreviado, what we call a short trial or a limited trial. Okay? So in order to get there, you've got to go through and eliminate all these other possibilities. And what I'm saying to you now is, if you bring this kind of notion forward, you start to understand why when you start talking jury trials, you get a lot of blank expressions, right? The only time I have, well, of course, you'll see it on the newscast because they will talk about it on the local news. The only jury I've ever seen was, and I don't watch this show, mind you, but on the Western Belleza Latina, where they've got the little swimsuit model thing, they got a jury for that. How do you vote? You ever watch that? That's the only time I've heard it used on a television show, okay? But beyond that, we are, in fact, in many respects, talking about zebras and blind people. So keep that in mind, and keep in mind also that not everything that is a violation of a traffic law in Texas might also be a traffic law in Mexico. For example, here's one that came as a surprise to me. There was a big article about 2 years ago, and I forgot which state it was in. It may have been in Nuevo León, where the judges, the magistrates, were under fire in the local newspapers because they were not dismissing insurance violations for people who purchased insurance when? Right after they got the ticket. This is kind of like buying a child safety seat after you get one of those tickets. Well, that was the law, or may still probably still is, in Nuevo León. If you went out and got insurance, brought it to the judge, he had to whack the ticket. Well, the judges weren't buying that. They were finding people, and the judges were getting sanctioned for it. Now, I've often wondered why it is that, you know, all the native speakers would always be running up to the front of the bench with the brand new insurance card they just got 2 days after they got the ticket. It didn't occur to me that maybe as a matter of cultural awareness, I should know that this is where they came from. This is probably the way it was done. Okay? Doesn't help them, but it helps me to understand why I was seeing so many insurance cards 2 days later. Now, I want to share with you a couple of other articles, and I think it will serve as a way of springboarding into some of the things that we routinely see in the paper. And frankly, I just printed these off my computer, I think, within a space of 2 or 3 days. Not all of the newspapers focus heavily on things that are traffic-related. All the newspapers you will find have typically a seguridad section or policiaca, something like that, where you can hit the police blotter or hit the... It all comes out the same with the police or accident cases. But look at the things that I've underlined here and see if these are words that you ordinarily see in your municipal court. Choca. Chocar. Choque. Is that a word that you use for wreck? I don't think wreck is right anymore. Everything is a crash now, right? I don't know when wreck became crash, but all of a sudden it became correct to say crash instead of wreck. Camión urbano. We don't have any camión urbanos in Pasadena. You may have them. City bus, no? The reason I know that is why? Because there's a picture. It helps me. Camión is a very frequently used term. It goes all the way from camión urbano to camioneta. It could be a van. It could be a truck. It could be a bus, it can be most anything. How do you all accuse somebody of having expired registration? Oh, come on, don't be shy. Some of you folks speak this language a lot better than I do. Se le venció. I just used... I use se le acusa de circular con placas vencidas. Everybody gets that one. But the idea is placas, word to use all the time. Now, the registration is not typically plates anymore. Used to be, but it ain't no more. But that works for me. I don't have any problem with placas vencidas in my court, and it's real simple. I don't have to go se le venció and all that kind of stuff. I get tangled up when I start using imperfect tenses and all those kinds of things. How about levantar el reporte? You ever use that? Yeah. Fill out a report. Make a report. Sometimes I've seen it even for levantar una boleta de infracción, to write out a ticket. But mostly for reports. And we have that all the time in my court. Okay. Next paragraph, se encontraba estacionado. I use that in favor of the more familiar parqueado. Yeah. I kind of hang with estacionado. And again, this is one of... Yeah. Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. But again, this is where I try to use the more formal term if I can, simply because I know what everybody says, parqueado, but, you know... Yeah, localizado. Yeah. Yeah, well, or put it in this particular location. Place it here, sure. I use estacionado as a matter of preference. But I've never seen a sign on a flea market that said anything other than parqueadero either. You know? That's what I see, okay? And that's what you see too. They always say that, parqueadero. And so, parquea, this is Tex-Mex. You know, as a person who's spent his life involved in languages of one form or another, you know, from Latin to German to Spanish to French, I will tell you that some of these things are perfectly common phenomena linguistically, okay? Let's take the Roman army marching eastward out of Rome in 25 A.D. And they got to Spain. And here comes these Roman soldiers marching into Spain. And they see this tree that didn't grow in Italy. What do you think they do? They ask a native, hey, dude, what do y'all call this tree? Right? So, how does the language then grow? Well, that language grows because of what they call linguistically substrata. That stuff is in existence. We don't know what else to call it. May as well call it what you call it. It's good as anything else. And so both languages morph a little when that happens. The Roman language picks up the whatever the word is for tree, and the native people of Spanish pick up a little of what the Romans do. Okay? Remember, Spanish is a Romance language. I always thought that was cool. You know, I thought of guitars and starry nights. You know why they call Spanish a Romance language? Take a guess. Because it came from the language of the Romans. Now, is that unromantic or what? Okay? But it is nonetheless true. And these kinds of things, if you talk about my example of the tree that grows in Spain as being a total mystery to the Roman soldiers, then you could imagine that when you've got things that we see about... I meant to print this one. There was an article about a juicio oral in Mexico, and they used, just flat out said it, the judge is going to fast-track this case. Of course, everything was in Spanish except fast-track. So what have they done? Well, you know what a fast track is? When you got a case in your court that you're trying to get moved, a judge will usually say, I'm going to fast track this one. That means it's getting out of here on the fast track. Well, that term got picked up completely and without any variation. And I will suggest to you that in 10 years, perhaps, in Chihuahua, fast track is never going to be translated. It is going to be a fast track. And so the language grows. And if so, in the sense that Tex-Mex represents that marriage and confluence of language, it's a perfectly viable language. It only falls apart when you talk to people who don't necessarily understand it any better than they understand English. All right, let's look at the next one I picked up. This time we got un fuerte choque. We got a really strong crash this time. And do y'all use el cruce?
Could y'all say golpe also?
Golpe? A choque is a result of a golpe, in my view. Okay? You see, you got a golpear. But more often than not, almost uniformly, I see choque. Almost always. And el cruce. Do y'all use cruce? Intersection, yeah, cross, cruce, intersection, cross street with, or what else do you use?
I use entre la calle so-and-so.
Yeah, this is a neat word to use, en el cruce de, they'll get it, it's in the newspaper, it's good work. Saldo daños materiales, what's a saldo? It's an outcome, a tale, right? With an outcome of property damage only, daños materiales. Where are we going to use daños materiales in our business? Well, we've got what? We've got a couple of things. We've got the wrecks, and we've also got a cause of action or a crime for doing property damage to another person's property, right? And what do we call that? boom, 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 boom. That'll be the thought question. All right. And so the paramedics got there. And to what? Revisarlo? What?
Yeah.
Check him out. There you go. Check him out. Revisar. I use, for example, for inspection. Okay? I use revisión técnica. A technical checkout. Okay? That's what I use. Calcomanía de revisión técnica. Or inspección. But revisar. Here's a word we use all the time. Trasladarlo. Transport. Yeah, transport. We transport typically to the hospital. I get a lot of people that are transported out of my jail, sadly, to La Migra. And so I tell them in the morning, lo van a trasladar al centro de inmigración. Okay? And that's because they're going to be transported. And the question I get, because so the reason I know it works is because they'll say, ¿cuándo me van a trasladar? When are they going to do it? Mañana. I'll give you another $100 credit, dude. But it's used all the time, particularly with ambulance and even for this kind of thing. Here is one that I use all the time in court in the next line. Well, los conductores, obviously. No respecto la luz roja de un semáforo. How do you say run a red light? Oh. La luz colorado. This I see this all the time. I use it. It works. It sounds kind of legalese. Se le acusa de no respetar la luz roja de un semáforo. Avenida X cruce con Avenida Z. No? And I see this a lot. Now, other people say, you know, no se detuvo, respetar un semáforo en luz roja, you'll see a lot. But no respetar is a lot. Era guiada, in this case, driven by, lots of words for drive. What do y'all use? Manejar, guiar, what else? You notice I use the word a lot of times when I talk about violations, circular. Circular. Like circulate. That is the word most commonly seen for operating a motor vehicle upon. Circulating upon. Moving about upon. Circular, see it all the time. In fact, I'm going to show you in the next example how I do speeding. How do y'all do speeding, by the way?
Alta velocidad.
Everybody says alta velocidad. That's not wrong. I expect.
Maneja
recio. Now there's Tex-Mex for you.
That's what I was like. And most of our people, most of our defendants are Tex-Mex.
Yeah. Sure. Again, we're working, but, let's be fair. The Tex-Mex people are typically as good Tex as they are Mex, if you know what I'm saying. So, you're not, I'm not trying to reach the people who probably understand my English. I'm trying to reach the people who don't understand my English. And that's why I've gone to this level. I mean, when I get somebody who I know is Tex-Mex, and I can look at a booking sheet, born in Brownsville, Texas. I know that he probably spent half of his childhood in Matamoros and half in Brownsville, and he probably understands English as well as Spanish. And I'm not going to worry too much about him because he knows what a red light is, okay? He also knows what speeding is. And alta velocidad is very commonly used. Hear it all the time. Look at the first line. Un auto compacto que circulaba was traveling a gran velocidad. I use a exceso de velocidad. That's the way I most commonly see it. Se le acusa de circular a exceso de velocidad. Okay? And that's it. Sir? Excessive speed. And then I'll usually qualify it and say 45 en zona de 35 or algo así. Something to amplify. Most of the time I never get past, I'll usually get a culpable and that'll be the end of that. We'll move on to something else. Derrapó, Derrapar, skid, slide. Chocó, again. How many times have we seen chocar? Are you getting the idea that, you know, if you go through the process that I've gone through, if you see chocar this many times in a couple of days worth of just random printing out traffic action and things, what word would you be most likely to use? Chocar. Because it's clear. This is the best word to use if you want to be understood. At least in my thing. Okay. Fue detenido. What is detenido? What do we do? Arrestado. Detenido. Yeah. What do you say? Detenido. Okay. Notice we've got... notice down at the bottom we are doing another levantar el reporte. So likely, if you're talking about somebody filling out an accident report or other report, levantar is a word that works. This is how I came up with basically what I have here. I didn't presume anything. I just kept looking, and when I saw something that repeated and repeated and repeated, it made sense to me. Excuse me, that it repeated for a reason. And the reason was that was the way it was commonly said. So, in the remaining time, which is not much before I send you to the hospitality room in room 141, ladies and gentlemen, please go. Most common cases in your court, what are they? Speeding, we talked about that. No insurance. How do we say insurance? Aseguranza. Seguro de responsabilidad, quizá, no? Both work for me. Aseguranza seems to be the most common. What else?
How do you say subpoena?
Subpoena, citatorio is what I use. I'm not sure. Citatorio. I'm not sure there is a good word for subpoena because we're only now getting into this process of really bringing people to court. My guess is it'll probably end up subpoena before it's all over. But I use citatorio. I've talked that over with Delia, that shit. How about one of my favorite cases? Drunk in public, public intoxication.
Oh.
You got to know that in a municipal court, right?
How do you translate?
You first, I asked. I'll tell you.
Tomado en público.
I'll tell you what I use. Use whatever you want. Andar ebrio.
What?
Andar ebrio. E-B-R-I-O. Ebrio. In estado de embriaguez, sure. Andar ebrio, that works every time for me. Now you got a P-I-O-T-A, what do? Andar drogado. I found that one in a newspaper with a complete definition. It works with all my drunks. They don't have a problem with that. I say, andar ebrio, culpable. When do I get out of here, dude? Now, I use boleta de infracción, which is very formal, and that works even with Cubans in Florida and other. Tiquete, I hear tiquete all the time. Me puso un tiquete. They tell me all the time. El policía me puso un tiquete.
Well, you said the judge is jurado,
right? Jury.
Okay. The judge is
juez? Juez. Yeah, prefiere juicio con juez o con jurado. Well, P.I. is my favorite one. How about... borracho can have some implications that are not particularly good. You know, un borracho couldn't be un borrachín, which would be a habitual drunk, a drunkard.
Yeah.
You know, I stay away from that, although that's the most common word for drunk. I usually don't do that one. And... if somebody doesn't get ebrio, but they always do, I go to tomao before I go to borracho. I really
would.
I don't think clerks are put to the task of translating unless they're certified to do so. Now, I've already told you, I've got half...
We're asked to go into the court to translate.
Well, I don't want to go there with you. I don't do that. I'm not going to go there with you except to tell you I don't do that. Yeah, and my people aren't. And you know what? Here's the good part, the bad part. I send all of my clerks to these schools as often as possible. I mean, rarely does a school buy this one. Buy nobody. I couldn't get anybody to go to Odessa. But rarely does a school pass that I don't have one or two clerks in school. They go all the time. I probably have a larger percentage of certified clerks in my court than any court in the state, you know, given the number of people that work for me. And about half of them are bilingual. Listen, I hire bilinguals as a preference because I need them. But I don't make them translate. And the reason I don't make them translate is because they come to school. I'm not going to be, you know, here I am telling them, we enforce the law, we enforce the law, we enforce the law, but not then. So what I did was I contracted with a guy who was a certified interpreter. I conduct my Spanish trials one Wednesday a month, jury trials in the morning, bench trials in the afternoon. Eduardo's on contract. He comes over. He translates for me all my Spanish trials on one day. We move them out. My clerks are trained. Even if somebody doesn't request it, if it's clear that this is not going to work in English, they put it on the Spanish docket. If it turns out the guy doesn't need an interpreter, I haven't lost anything. If it turns out he does, we're ready to go to trial. Now, that's how I conduct it. Now, I don't know that that translation applies necessarily to doing work at the window or... Well, I mean, isn't that a proceeding? I don't know. I don't want to, you know, same thing. I don't do that. Well, see, I don't have that problem because one of the reasons I developed the vocabulary, sometimes it's just, you know, you got to do it. You got to get it done if you don't have a certified translator. Some courts just go grab the janitor from the broom closet and, you know what I'm talking about. And others have people who regularly do it. My clerks express a general reluctance to do this because of the reasons that I said. And I don't blame them. By the way, how do you say appear in court? Presentarse, or a more correct word is comparecer, comparecencia, comparecer ante la corte, or comparecer en la corte. You'll see that all the time. All right, your hospitality room is room 141. Now, before you run off, let me tell you this. I think going to the hospitality room is a good thing. I just don't want you to get tomado, okay? Yeah. But the cerveza is gratis. And the food is good. And what I want you to do, because I think it's important to me, I have been in every city we've had a school this year, teaching either in the judge's school or in the clerk's school. The Texas Municipal Courts Association is a fine organization. I've served proudly on the board of directors for 4 years. They do good work. They sponsor as a wholly owned subsidiary, if you will, the Texas Municipal Court Education Center, which puts on these seminars, puts together these materials, makes them available to you for literally nothing. Get yourself here is about what it costs. And they've got a wonderful website that if you don't visit, you should visit. You can find all kinds of neat stuff that will help you in your everyday work in the court. I encourage you to do that. I also encourage you to participate in the organization because the organization is an organization that has your best interest and my best interest at heart. Things have happened that not necessarily for clerks in the last two sessions, but two things have happened in the last two sessions of the legislature that have made my position and my status much higher. Up until a couple of years ago, as a municipal judge, I was unable to administer an oath to an individual in a matter not touching on my job. So, when the mayor called me and said, "Hey, judge, I want you to swear in the new council," I had to say, "Hey, sorry, no puedo." And I couldn't. That got changed. Now, municipal judges can administer oath like another judge, and I can put my little robe on next month and go down and swear in the mayor and council. It helps the esteem of the municipal judge. It helps the esteem of the municipal court. This year, effective September 1, I'll be able to do marriages for the first time in the history of the state. That's a big deal. It's a big bill. Now, I'm going to suggest to you folks that these things would not have happened but for the continued effort over the years of the Municipal Court Association. And other things will happen. As you participate, and when you participate, you'll find that there are things that you can advocate for that might make your life a little easier, might make the process of becoming certified a little easier as an interpreter. I mean, it is a giant pain. I'm 7 years later, I still don't have a certified interpreter in my court. You know, I sent them down there, and they came back like this, and I said, what happened? They said, well, Judge, our Spanish was good, but our procedures were terrible. Well, who knew? You know, who knew? I didn't know. I didn't know what to expect. I figured if you could speak the language, you got not case. They've got all these ethical things that they've got to do, and like every other specialty, you know, the folks who are in there are interested in one thing, keeping everybody else out, okay? So I still don't have a certified interpreter in a court, and I still have the same problems you have, and I finally just had to go contract with somebody to get this work done, and it's a problem. Because I know you feel like the ladies in my court, you don't want to do a disservice to the person who's standing in front of you because you haven't translated something effectively. Once again, nobody expects anything of me, so it's easier. But if somebody puts you on the spot, it's a lot tougher. All right, folks, thanks for your attention. Have a good evening. Go to room 141. Yeah. Have a free beer and a good evening. Uh-huh.